Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday, day after Christmas 2015, folks. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio with our holiday edition, Christmas edition, Hanukkah edition, whatever edition you want it to be. I'm going to tell you a couple things today. I'm not sure it's going to be on the lighter side. Some of it may be. Some news has to be covered, unfortunately, even in this Christmas week. But I'm going to talk a little bit about this book tour I just got done with. Last signing yesterday, Christmas Eve, Gateway, Salt Lake. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about some of the things you can see shaping up in gun control, give you a couple of things to think about for the upcoming year, because it's going to be a hotly contested issue. And I am going to kind of tie in Christmas to this show in the last two segments of the show. Number one, and we're going to talk about charity and self-charity, reliance, also known as dependency, and self-reliance. And I'm going to use as a case in point Spain, the country of Spain in Europe, indicative of Europe, indicative really of the social mindset of many of the people of all the Western nations, including the United States. And what I'm going to tell you about Spain is going to shock you. And then we're going to talk about religion. Religion in the Middle East. I think very apropos this day after Christmas 2015. I'm not sure you really understand, except on the most general stratospheric level, what's going on over there. What the long-term repercussions are. And you know, even more important to that, what the right and wrong of it all is, right? There is a right and wrong. There is a good and there is an evil. For sure. And I think one of the successes of the Star Wars film, besides all us Star Wars junkies, I haven't seen it yet. I think I'm going to. I don't go to a lot of movies, but I'm a Star Wars fan from way back and a huge believer in the Force. I guess I call it spirit, along the lines of the Indians. But there is a force out there. There is a good, and there is an evil, and there is a universal energy. Anyway, we're going to get into that in the last two-thirds of the show. Let's start, shall we? First of all, I want to thank all the tremendous folks that I met that bought books, thousands of books, in fact, over the course of the last 24 whatever days, since November 29th. It's been a non-stop drumbeat of book signings. I want to thank all those great folks that I talked to, those who bought books, those who didn't buy books. I mean, everybody with the small exception of a few, that 1/100th of 1% you find anywhere, any place, were just a huge treat. A huge treat. I'm going to give you a couple anecdotes, too, which I think, one or two might make your eyes misty. They did mine. And I want to thank the great staffs of the Barnes & Nobles I signed at. Cheyenne, Wyoming Barnes & Noble, Fort Collins, Colorado Barnes & Noble, Lone Tree, Colorado Barnes & Noble, Pueblo, Colorado, Barnes & Noble, Denver West, Barnes & Noble, Gateway in Salt Lake, Barnes & Noble, Grand Junction, that was a big treat over there, Grand Junction, Colorado, Barnes & Noble, Twin Falls, Idaho, another huge treat, Barnes & Noble, and Idaho Falls, Barnes & Noble, and if I left anybody out, my apologies, I'm just kind of rattling them off the tip of my tongue here, but loads of people starting the series. I think there were over 2,000 book ones sold, and obviously book ones are sold to people who are starting the series. And I think many of them, it's currently 93% of the folks who read one book go on to the next, very high for the industry average. A lot of them will be going on to books two and three. And I'm here to tell you that after the wrecks of last year, for all those, and there were hundreds, hundreds of you who came in, I could always tell one of my readers who was looking for book four, the long-delayed book four, I could tell because they walked in the store with either a hangman's noose or a pitchfork. Yeah, they were easy to identify. But I had pictures with me because really pictures kind of tell the story of the lost year of 2015 for the cowboy between the truck wreck and the house wreck and a host of other things. And I'm going to make up for it. My nose is going to be to the book grindstone this year. Books 4, 5, and 6, we are going to do our level best to get them out. March, April for 4, May, June for 5, and September, October for 6, Blood of Glorieta Pass. And I'm going to try and get 3 out next year, too. I'm going to make up for lost time, you great readers. And I'm going to keep them coming at you like staccato. And we'll see if I can, unfortunately, you turn the pages far faster than I can write them, so I don't think I'm ever going to be ahead of you, but I'm sure as hell going to be trying to catch up. Because I got to tell you, I love this story. Particularly in today's times, the erasure, the manipulation, the twisting, the revision of our history for ideological just makes me wretch. And I love writing our real history. I love writing our history from the perspectives of the characters, the Oglala Sioux, the Ute Indians, the men and women from England and Ireland, Norway, Denmark, Prussia, upcoming new characters, including from Asia, the twisted renegade who jumps into the story in Book 2, Blackfeather, a man that you, in the beginning, will hate, but a complex character that perhaps your opinion will slightly change of as the story progresses. And his captive, Dot, meek, saw her parents and family slain by this wild man. She's going to be going on under an evolution also. And Johannes, late of the King's Cavalry, decorated veteran of the Danish Cavalry, who has come to America with his good friend Reuben Frank from Prussia. You know, it's a story of us, right? It is our story. That's not just a marketing line we use. It truly is our story. The Utes and the Sioux and the Europeans. The American trapper, Zebriah Taylor, who many people regard as their favorite character, although that's pretty well spread. And Sarah Bonney, the seamstress from Liverpool, and Rebecca Marks, the hoity-toity babe from the upper crust row houses of London, with her own family problems to try and take care of. You know, it is... my producer's reminding me, and Felipe Reyes, great character. Very complex, and not happy having lost his estancia to the Yankees in the Texas Revolt, chased north by the Texas Rangers, who comes into the story in Book 3 along with the Ute family. This is the story of us. It is the story of uncommon cultures, differing origins, competing ambitions, both men and women, some of them very dark, and how they weave together into the cloth of the country. I was asked by one reader in Twin Falls, well, Threads West, where, how did you come up with that name? And it's very simple, folks. This series is called Threads West, an American Saga, because it is about the threads of many lives that weave together into the tapestry of America. It is a huge story. And I am struck, I must tell you, even in these days of divisive politics, by those who would try and rip this fabric of us, this tapestry of us apart. A tapestry which, by the way, is unique amongst nations. Every other country on the face of the planet is a mosaic. We are the only tapestry, and it is where we derive our strength, so long as we logically and intelligently apply it. No matter how much they try and rip it apart, oh, they can pop a yarn here and there, and they can stretch the fabric, and they can twist it and distort it. But, you know, in the end, it's still a fabric. It's still a fabric. And it's a fabric that is under attack by those who hate America and by those who are traitors. I'll say it plain and simple. Traitors. In any event, I really enjoyed talking with everybody. And I learned a lot. I'm going to process it. I've given you a couple updates here over the last few weeks while I've been broadcasting while on the road. But I learned a lot. Boy, I'll tell you what. In the end, I gave out 5,925, give or take, 5 cards. Which means that I talked to about that many people over the course of 22 days. And you know, you learn an awful lot when you talk to 5,900 people over 24 days in 5 different states, all sorts of locations from all walks of life, young and old, male and female, black, white, Asian, Hispanic, you name it. Talk to everybody. Pretty fascinating. I'm going to share that with you in the next week or two. But anyway, my thanks to the great readers, my thanks to the people who talk to me, even though they're not yet readers, and my thanks to those stores and the great staff at those stores. Let's move from that right now to gun control. I'm going to be brief about this because I'm going to do a comprehensive show on this sometime in the next month or two when I see which way the disgusting winds at the White House are drifting. But let me alert you to a couple of things. Number one, Seattle passed a gun tax. It is a tax of $25 to $50 on each firearm purchased, and it is also a percentage tax on ammunition purchased. Now, this was challenged in the lower court. I think we all know that Washington State is rather blue, and the lower court upheld the right of the city to tax it. My personal opinion is that's totally unconstitutional, and I think it's going to be beat down by higher courts, which is where it is on its way to right now. But look for the left, particularly in the face of growing public opinion, now over 60%, that completely disfavors tampering with the Second Amendment, disfavors gun control of virtually any type. And in fact, a growing percentage, now close to 50%, and I've had shows on this. In fact, 3 weeks ago, I said, you want to stop terrorism? You make it mandatory that every citizen in the United States at age 16 is trained to use a firearm. And you make it mandatory that everybody own a firearm. If not every individual, at least every household. Whether or not they use it, whether or not they disassemble it, whether or not they throw in the trash, that's up to them. But it is mandatory, like Israel, like Switzerland, like Finland, which, by the way, those latter two countries have virtually no crime, and Israel has virtually no crime within its own population. Its problems, obviously, are with terrorists. Gee, kind of sounds like the United States. In any event, we're going to be keeping our eyes on this because the Democrats, desperate with public opinion turning in a tidal wave against them, are going to try every subterfuge in the world to undermine your Second Amendment rights at exactly the time that they should be strengthened and not tampered with. And this tax deal is one way. I don't know if you saw the Hillary debate, the Democratic debate. I mean, I had to sit there and kind of try not to retch as I listened to these morons. These ideologues, and in the case of Hillary, this manipulative, power-hungry, lying, just disgusting, Just disgusting. You know, Barack Obama, and I've done shows on this, I can understand him. He's an ideologue. He is a man of the extreme left. He is a Muslim sympathizer at the least. I've talked about the unholy alliance between the extreme left and radical Islam. I've given you all sorts of shows about the Muslim Brotherhood, buddy-buddies with Barry and Valerie Jarrett, his Iranian-born Muslim handler from Tehran, Iran, and his closest confidant on the planet, never mind in the White House. I've given you all that information. But I, you know, when you look at Hillary, she's not driven by ideology. She is driven by personal power and money. I'm not sure which is worse. As much as I dislike it, detest it, loathe it, I can understand Barry because he is a man acting on his beliefs and he doesn't care about America or the American people. He is going to enact his beliefs. But Hillary Clinton is another animal. She has no beliefs. She is amoral. She has no morality. She is the worst combination of everything. She will do anything, say anything, perform or not perform any act, take any act, or fail to act, so long as it betters her personal position and her pocketbook. That's a dangerous person. A person without integrity. And in her debate, if you listen to it, there was a point in time at which one of the announcers asked her, one of the moderators, asked her, well, American public opinion is now firmly against, I'm paraphrasing, firmly against gun control. Do you think they're wrong? And of course, she didn't answer the question directly. Instead, she spouted off about how gun control was necessary, was a necessity, and this was the only way to stop crime and stop violence and yada yada. And arming the American public was not necessarily the best way to get that done, and et cetera. And in that discourse, she gave out several points, which everybody likes to kind of glom onto, even though they're dangerous. You know, strengthening background checks and closing loopholes at gun shows and the usual stuff. You guys have heard it. But she also said, and she has said this from the beginning, remember, she is a trained lawyer, that she wants to end the immunity for this one industry. Virtually every industry has immunities of some type, folks. I mean, otherwise they couldn't function. They'd be sued into oblivion. Particularly in our system, which is the American rule, which is everybody pays their own attorney's fees. Under the English rule in Europe, if you bring a lawsuit and you lose, you pay both sides attorney's fees. That keeps spurious suits down. Of course, bringing the English rule into the American judicial system is virtually impossible because of the strength and power of the American Trial Lawyers Association, who, big surprise, is one of Hillary's biggest contributors. Wow. Do we see any connection here? Mm-hmm. You bet. Go back to my original surmise about Hillary. In any event, I want you to understand the danger in this immunity thing. If immunity is stripped away from a manufacturer of firearms or ammunition, if immunity is stripped away from a dealer who followed all the federal laws, you know, in other words, did not do anything illegal or wrong, but, you know, sold a gun to some guy who gets radicalized online and goes out and kills a bunch of people that Barry will say is workplace violence until his FBI contradicts him, that loss of immunity for that industry, which would make it a special industry, would be the end of your Second Amendment rights. Because there would be lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit. These companies could not withstand it. They would have to close. If they're not making guns, folks, and they're not manufacturing ammunition, They don't have to take away your Second Amendment rights. You simply will be unable to exercise them. Understand what this is really about. And make sure your friends understand what this is really about. That immunity thing is really the end of your right to keep and bear arms. Certainly your right to purchase them or to buy ammunition for them. All right. The last thing I want to say about gun control is I am sick and tired. I want you to know that the federal laws on the books have all the teeth we need to take care of violent crime or crime using a gun in this country. And do you know who does not enforce those laws? The federal government does not enforce those laws. And I am sick and tired of all these Democratic left-wing anti-gun nut jobs on various TV stations and radio shows talking about how violence is up. Violence is down, folks. The decrease in violence is directly proportional to the increase in gun ownership, which, as you know, is skyrocketing. Isn't that amazing? The several towns in the United States who mandate that their citizens be armed have, when I say zero crime, I'm talking about 1/1,000th of a percent of crime, and none of it is violent or armed crime, except in the case of domestic disputes. And that's usually a frying pan or a knife. All the nasty acts, not only by Islamic extremists, but by nutcases, who I happen to think, by the way, are under the influence of some kind of mind control. I'm going to have a whole show on that over the next 3 or 4 months. I've been researching it for more than a year. I've talked about it in the past. I'm going to throw out a wild conspiracy theory for you. I'm going to give you the facts, and you can make the decision whether you believe it or not. But all the nut jobs, you know, the shooting case in Colorado, where he passed up 6 theaters that allowed firearms and went to the one that did not. The mall shooting. the unfortunate deal with that church in the southeast, where a racist nut walked in and gunned down 8 or 9 black clergymen and parishioners. Excuse me, I still have this cold. It ain't going away. All of these crimes are committed in gun-free zones. All of them. There is no exception to that. There's been no mass shooting. Any place where people are armed. Do you think that's just a coincidence? Do you think Hillary Clinton doesn't know that? Do you think Barack Obama doesn't know that? They know that. They know that very well. And what's going on in Chicago, Barack Obama's hometown, 4,400 gun deaths. I heard a Democratic anti-gun nut pundit talking the other day. There's been 33,000 firearm-related accidents and fatalities and woundings and da 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 da. Well, guess what? Look at this. First of all, his statistics are high. That's number one. But even taking his 33,000 number, which he's trumped up using a bunch of subterfuge statistics, using his number, and let's call it good for the purposes of this discussion, more than half are committed in 5 cities. And those 5 cities have the strictest gun control laws. But they're not enforced. At the local level, at the state level, and we're talking about Chicago, New York, LA, Detroit. They're not enforced, folks. If Barack Obama got off his high horse and off his ideological bent to strip Americans of their arms so they could not defend themselves against the government, which is his real purpose. Understand that. And Hillary got off her high horse, which is to strip Americans of their arms only because she wants to win the nomination and she needs to say that at the current time to better Hillary's position. If those people enforce the laws, 5 years mandatory for use of a gun, et cetera, the laws which are on the books, if Barack Obama tomorrow, instead of his pandering to Muslim, sickening speeches full of lies, got up, looked in the camera and said, I want every law enforcement agency in this country to arrest every gangbanger, every drug addict, every felon who is armed or is considered to be armed or is a threat to create or to perpetrate a crime with a gun. I want them off the streets. Thousands of those people, folks, would be off the streets. You would not have this outrageous, and it's time and time and time again, whether it's illegal immigrants, illegal aliens, sanctuary cities, or non-sanctuary cities where felons go in front of liberal judges who take their ilk, shall we say, who take their mojo from a White House who really wants violence up to get gun control done. Understand that? Barack Obama does not care about you. He doesn't care whether the violence is jihad or Islamic extremism, which he fails to recognize or enunciate. And he doesn't care if it's inner city crime. He doesn't care if it's black on black, white on black, black on white, blue on black, whatever. He doesn't care. He has an agenda. Your safety is not part of that. Your disarming is. Because if he got up and said, enforce the laws that are on the books, you'd see violent crime drop, even in those crime-ridden areas, precipitously. Like 50, 60, 70, 80, 90%. Instead of people who are convicted felons get arrested for crimes involving guns and are given, instead of 10 years mandatory, 5 years probation, like that Darius creep in Chicago who was let out on probation when he should have had 10 years by a liberal judge kowtowing to the Obama and Rahm Emanuel administration, who went out within days with a weapon and shot that poor 9-year-old kid sitting on the bed doing her homework through the head. Black on black, I might add. Not that it really matters. If you're dead, it doesn't matter what color you are. If somebody who should be in jail has been let out by a government complicit in his crime. Well, you know, you see where I'm going. But they don't want to solve the problem. They want to disarm you. And you know, along those lines, to prove my point, two things have come out in the last week, and then I'm going to move into our Christmas segment. Fa-la-la-la-la. Deck the halls. All right, 'tis a season to be jolly. I'm trying.